Ladies and gentlemen, we'll call the meeting to order. First order of business is, would ask if you turn all your cell phones on to vibrate or turn them off or whatever. I think we probably are all kind of used to doing that now. Thank you all for coming. My name is Perry Miller. I'm a Richland County Commissioner and the Chairman of the Richland-Wilkin Joint Powers Authority. Can you hear me in back? All right, thanks. The purpose of the meeting tonight, the Joint Powers Authority was asked by some of its member entities, Bakke and Hickson and the townships, Pleasant and Normanna, to almost be an intermediary, I guess, and to host a meeting, an informational meeting. And we've been working with Cass County Commissioner Daryl Vanio here to my right. And we started back in, I think, May, Daryl, and either one of us always had a conflict, so we finally got it set up for tonight. I want to thank Commissioner Vanio for coming. He will be the main source of hopefully answering our questions this evening, and he's also brought along a pretty good group of elected and appointed officials here, whether it be from the Joint Cass Water Board or from the City of Fargo or Cass County. With that, just a little bit of ground rules. What we had done early is to ask to submit questions to be asked here tonight, because there are so many questions, and we thought it was a much more expedient way to get questions answered rather than talking with one or two people at a time. So we have compiled a group of questions. We've attempted to categorize them by category, so we're not jumping around too much, but inevitably in a format like this, we're going to have questions that lead to other questions. So with that in mind, in the back of the room somewhere, Pat is in back there, right in the middle, in the green or blue shirt. Is that green or blue, Pat? Turquoise. There we go. So if you have a question, if a question comes to mind, we are not going to open up microphones. Nathan Burseth is with me. Nathan's a member of the Upstream Coalition Board of Directors. He and I will ask the questions of Commissioner Vanio, and if he needs maybe to employ the assistance of one of the folks he brought with him. That's kind of the approach we're going to take. We want a very civil meeting. We're not going to tolerate any shouting or yelling or chair throwing. We don't want this to turn into a Jerry Springer episode. So we want a very civil, calm, and open dialogue and in an attempt to get some questions answered. A few more introductions. To my left is the Secretary of the Joint Powers Authority and Wilkin County Commissioner Steph Marinowski. To my far left is the Wilkin County and also Breckenridge City Attorney Tim Fox. And Tim has been through a little bit of a project like this in Breckenridge. Also, we have Richland County State's Attorney Ron Macbeth. Ron is right here. Ron was recently appointed. We have Breckenridge Mayor Cliff Barth. I don't know. There he is in back. And we have District 25 Senator Larry Lewick and in front here, and Richland Commissioner Sid Berg from the Colfax area. We're going to try to keep this to about an hour and a half so this doesn't draw out too long. We'll try to keep things moving and keep things informative. With that, if you have any questions, once again, go to Pat in back. She has recipe cards. Fill out any questions, and she has pens. And you will take them to, where's Craig and Cash are back there. She'll take them and she'll get them, and they'll get the questions fed up to us here on the screen. So any questions, just head back to Pat, fill them out, and she'll take it from there. So with that, I think we'll get started. And the first category we wanted to deal with was the planning of the project. And as most of you know, the Upstream Coalition hired a lobbyist. Her name is Rayanne Kell. She's a former legislator from the Mandan area. And this is directly to you, Commissioner. In Bismarck, Rayanne stated that you promised on a stack of Bibles, this is in quote marks, that no construction would begin south of Fargo for 2 years. This was during the legislative session. So with what we've been hearing, can you shed some light? When is construction slated to happen south of Fargo?
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. South of Fargo the south levee is what we were talking about. We were not talking about Oxbow, Bakke, and Hickson. And so the wheels are in motion for that. I dare say that we won't see any construction happening this year, but more than likely, if things do continue to roll, that we would have something starting in 2014.
And you're referring to the ring dike around Bakke?
Yeah.
Going to the ring dike around Hicks and Oxbow Bakke, what role will the Army Corps have in the construction of that ring dike and its associated features, Commissioner?
At this stage, they're just completing the environmental impact analysis, the design. We just addressed the design for that ring dike construction and the budget for that. My memory serves me correct. We have designed by the Corps of Engineers to the tune of about $1 million. And I believe for local engineering firms, $2.1 or $2.2 million for design. We haven't gotten to anything beyond that at this point.
So, but the Army Corps is involved in the design?
They will be involved, yes.
Okay, all right. Ring dike, what... Back to the ring dike, and we'll stay on that for a little bit. And this is an engineering question, I'm sure. It might be better answered by someone else. But what effects have been determined that ring dike would have, not only the weight of the ring dike, but to store 12 or 15 feet of water during a very large event? What effect would the ring dike and all of that water have on the septic systems, the foundations, and the internal drainage of the three communities?
I'll start out, and then if anyone from the engineers want to add to it, they're welcome to. And by the way, as Commissioner Miller had indicated, there are a number of folks here, either with the county or Water Resource District, our auditor, that are here. And if there's questions that pertain to them, I would have them come up here and answer them. But going back, your concern is about the engineering aspect of the ring dike. It will be engineered to Army Corps of Engineers standards, which means that it's no different than any levee that's along the Red River or anywhere in the Red River Basin. So with that in mind, most people along the Red River Corridor Basin live behind a ring dike if you're in any community. Lee or Keith, anything to add with regard to that?
While Keith's sitting down, Commissioner Vanuul, so the Army Corps will be involved in the construction of the and certification of the ring dike as well?
Yes.
Okay.
I think the question involved both drainage and the septic systems within the levee, if I understood correctly. First of all, as far as drainage, there will be drainage within the levee system designed to have pumping systems that will keep the interior dry. In fact, it'll be designed so that if you have a major rainstorm, when there is water on the levee, there'll be sufficient pumping capacity to ensure that the inside stays dry. Regarding the septic systems, there'll be a detailed analysis done of the septic systems during the design to make sure that doesn't become an issue. But I would just say from experience up and down the Red River Valley, there are all kinds of communities with levees and on-site septic systems within that. So we wouldn't anticipate that'll be a problem, but that'll be dealt with during the detailed design process.
Will all that be paid for with Diversion Authority dollars, or will that be
what's expected? All of the infrastructure pertaining to the drainage, and if there were any sewage improvements that had to be made, would be part of the project and paid for by the Diversion Authority.
Including curb and gutter, if that's required?
If curb and gutter were required, I don't think that analysis has been done yet, but certainly if there was some requirement to have curb and gutter, that would be part of the infrastructure, yes.
Is that included in the $65 million?
I don't believe it is. I don't believe that they've... Assume you're talking about within Bakke. They've assumed a similar level of infrastructure as was there now.
The Oxbow differs here in answering that question in the fact that currently Oxbow has streets, curb and gutter, and therefore replacement will include that, and that is in the cost. There are a number of lots that in the undeveloped area of Oxbow that go beyond what would the needs would be for moving of people in Oxbow. And in that essence, we are building, we are taking care of that infrastructure, and depending upon where the people come to fill those lots, basically they have to purchase if they aren't being moved from somewhere else around the ring dike. So there's some variations in how one might answer that. Obviously, with regard to Bakke, where you have a different situation other than curb and gutter, the infrastructure for drainage and all of that would be picked up. But if we're putting in curb and gutter for something for other reason, no, then it wouldn't be included.
Are those studies being conducted with the EIS that we're waiting for, or are those above and beyond that? The internal impacts of the ring dike, is that part of the EIS that we're waiting for?
The study of the drainage within the ring dike, that's part of the what we'll be doing leading to design.
Okay.
Eric, do you have to speak directly on the microphone other than the side?
Okay. Yeah, I think he turned to look at us probably, so yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah. If anybody else can't hear anything, just don't be afraid to give a shout. This last few months ago, Wolverton, of course, we all remember, had a 9-inch rain event in a very short period of time. And we actually saw a ring dike around a Clay County Commissioner's yard fill up and almost flood his house. And you probably partially answered that, but maybe a little more detail on how you plan to deal with a heavy sudden rain event such as that inside the dike.
I can take a shot at that. When a project is designed with a ring levee to be certified by the Corps, it has to be certified not only to withstand a 100-year flood from the outside, but during the midst of that 100-year flood, if you had a 100-year rainstorm on the inside, you have to have sufficient capacity to prevent flooding, and we've never had a 100-year rainstorm, so there will be a massive pumping system within the inside of the ring levee.
And I would assume some type of generator system if the power were to fail?
Keith? Yes.
All right. Is raising Interstate 29 going to be a part of the ring dike project for Hixson, Bakke, and Oxbow?
County Road 81 and then 18 leading up to the interchange will be raised. And to my knowledge, that's it. I don't think there's anything else with regard to raising interstate in that area.
The raising of the interstate would have to happen prior to any structure being built, any dam-type structure or levee-type structure to the north, but the ring levee around Oxbow, Bakke, and Hixson would not necessitate raising of the interstate.
What are the events that have to happen before construction can begin? I mean, what if is you understand the question, Darrell? Okay.
Well, obviously, land acquisition. We made an approval at the Diversion Authority meeting to have the Cass County Joint Water Resources Board take care of the land acquisition issues, so that's obviously first. Design work has to be completed. That's in conjunction with local engineers and the Corps of Engineers. There has to be the timing issues with the golf course because they've indicated that they don't desire to be shut down for any construction. So those types of things have to come into play to set the course of the schedule.
So you're taking consideration farming schedules then as well?
Excuse me?
Will you take in consideration farming schedules as well? You said you're taking in consideration the golf course.
I'm not sure I'm following that.
Well,
I mean for crops and stuff.
Correct, yes.
Part of the design will have to look at that.
And so, and I think you answered it, you'll be using state eminent domain in regards to the taking of those of the property, or federal?
I'm sorry, Nathan, I'm not hearing it.
Are you going to be using state or federal eminent domain for the taking of that property?
Oh, that is not eminent domain for the where the ring levee is going?
Well, if there's an unwilling landowner.
for
the purchase.
On, you mean one of, an existing yes. resident?
Yeah, and or any land that needs to be for the taking.
Yeah, if the Diversion Board of Authority has worked out an agreement with the Cass County Joint Water Resource Board, so we would anticipate that they will be doing all of the land acquisition, so if there were eminent domain became necessary, they would use their statutory authority. Certainly the Corps of Engineers also has that authority, but we don't envision at this point using it.
Before any of this even begins, do you still need congressional authorization from the House?
No, not for... not for the Oxbow Bakke Hickson ring levy.
Your organization, you've talked about constructing a temporary or emergency dike to protect the metro area from a 500-year flood event. How would that work without a control structure on the Red River? This might be a Keith question, I'm thinking. So, get the engineer hat on there, Keith.
So you had indicated if there were going to be a 500-year flood, is that the question? What steps might be taken on an emergency basis?
Well, I think the person was wondering how do you do that without somehow having a control structure on the Red River?
Well, if we had a forecast that there were going to be a flood larger magnitude than we've seen before, we realize on an emergency basis we would not have the ability to construct a structure on the Red River. So we would have to do the best we could with ring levees. But the odds of surviving Fargo surviving a 500-year flood with levees along the river alone without a control structure would be quite low.
Back to Commissioner Vanier, you said there's no authorization needed to complete the ring dike or start the ring dike. Isn't the ring dike part of the feature of the diversion in the dam?
Yes, it is. But we, in talking with the Corps of Engineers, can proceed with an MOU in terms of our contribution for that kind of a credit in terms of the dollars.
So you're moving forward with the assumption that you'll receive credits of using local dollars and be received credits back from the federal government. Is that correct? How often does that happen? I mean, that's usually not the way the federal government works, correct?
Well, we're moving ahead with Oxbow Bakke Hickson in that regard because we felt it was paramount to take care of the limbo situation that people are in.
Do you need a Minnesota DNR permit to build the diversion and the dam, or I forget the word you guys use for it. I think we have differing opinions on terminology there, but you know what
yes.
I'm talking about.
The answer is yes.
Okay. You do need a permit. Okay.
When is that expected?
The Minnesota DNR has undertaken an EIS process. I expect they're about a year away from completing that process, but we do anticipate that there is no permit required from the DNR for the Oxbow Hickson Bakke levy. We anticipate their EIS process will be done long before there's any construction of a control structure.
You can say with 100% certainty there's no DNR approval for the ring dike around Oxbow Bakke?
We can say that many other communities up and down the Red River Valley on the North Dakota side have ring dikes around them, and they have not gotten permits from the Minnesota DNR to construct those ring dikes.
Not to this level, obviously.
I'm sorry?
Not to this level. I mean, this is a new ball game.
Would you please use
the
words instead of acronyms?
Sure.
Which acronym?
PSI, the PSI.
Okay, well, of course, the DNR is the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. If you've ever caught too many fish, you probably know those guys. The EIS, if you hear that, it's Environmental Impact Statement. So it's a federal requirement, and they have to do a study. And I'm sure Mr. Berndt could give a much better description, but it kind of the name speaks for itself. Are you legally obligated at this time to build the dike around Oxbow Hickson Bakke?
Well, from the standpoint of our work with Oxbow and the MOU, you know, we're headed in that direction. I don't know if something were to stop that now, that there would be, you know, the ramifications. If anything, it would be from Oxbow. But I can answer that.
The MOU with Oxbow, the Oxbow City Council has approved that MOU. It's been approved by the Diversion Board of Authority. Now also the North Dakota entities, the Cass County Joint Water Resource District, the County Commission, and the City of Fargo will also approve that. So once all three of those entities have approved that, then there'll be an approved memorandum of understanding. But there are contingencies in that memorandum of understanding. For instance, if the Corps of Engineers, if the EIS wasn't completed, or if for any other reason the project couldn't go forward, there are contingencies written within that agreement that would anticipate that possibility.
And in regards to Bakke, who's speaking on behalf of Bakke?
Well, Bakke, Hixson, they are not an incorporated city, and the Diversion Authority made the motion to move forward with ring diking all three communities.
And I would just say we would, I think we've been pretty consistent as the Diversion Authority, and we've had an ongoing dialogue with Oxbow, and we've invited the township and we've invited representatives from Bakke to enter into a similar dialogue, and we would continue to welcome that sort of a dialogue. If Bakke subdivision wanted to enter into a dialogue where we had a similar type of agreement, we would welcome that.
I'm going to skip forward on my questions here because this is leading into something in the next group of questions, but the questioner here said there are 190 residences in Hixson, Bakke, and Oxbow. Aaron Schneider and Keith Burnt both represented that this community would only be ring-diked if the residents approved. Only 60 of the residences voted for it. The overwhelming majority have rejected it. What changed?
I'm not sure your comment about who said if the majority of these people wanted it. My understanding has always been that Oxbow, as an incorporated city, needed to vote on it. Beyond that, it could be the county, it could be the Diversion Authority that decides for the rest. Keep in mind that residences, farmsteads in the staging area are not afforded a vote.
How about the township?
What's that?
How about the township?
The township is not afforded a vote. You know, I liken this.
Why would the city be afforded a vote but not the township?
Why would you, for example, interstates, railroads, anything that's built, if you take only the negatively impacted people, what are you going to have across the country in terms of anything being built? So if you're taking the people in the staging area and the townships, we're taking incorporated cities, and we have the legal right, as told me by our state's attorney, as a county or the Diversion Authority Board, to make the decision for those that are not in an incorporated city.
Okay, backing up, Aaron Schneider and Keith Burnt both represented to the Bakke homeowner president, Dennis Bewer, and I've talked to him personally, that they would not pursue a ring dike if the residents weren't on board with it. Of course, they held two separate votes, and they came back negative that they weren't in favor of it. So I think that goes back to the person who wrote this question. What changed? Why were they asked if basically their opinion didn't matter?
I cannot speak for Aaron Schneider, but I can speak for myself, and I can say assuredly I've never promised anybody that or represented to anybody that I was in a position to make that decision. I've been very consistent that the Diversion Board of Authority would ultimately make the decision as to whether or not there was a ring dike. So I'm not sure if that person misunderstood me at some point, but I can just assure you that that was not said.
So non-elected officials are making decisions for major impacts for folks, and they have no say in this matter, is what you're saying. Because that Diversion Authority...
I think you're putting words into my mouth. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying the Diversion Authority, which consists of almost all elected officials. It's true there are a couple of appointed officials from the water resource districts, but the diversion authority is elected officials, and we've been consistent that the diversion authority was going to make that decision.
The Army Corps, a couple weeks ago in Valley City, that projects that are under a 2.0 benefit-cost ratio are not currently being funded. I believe is the current benefit-cost ratio for this project, is it 1.5, Mr. Berndt?
I believe it's 1.8.
Okay. What do you propose to do prior to federal funding, and what if you don't get federal funding?
Sure. You know, until we've at least had the opportunity to ask and to pursue it, you know, things didn't look all that great in the North Dakota legislature this year either with moving things forward. You know, to what if about circumstances, it may be reality, but we would like the opportunity to get through authorization, which I think we will get, and then to push forward with appropriation. If we don't get appropriation, then obviously after a certain period of time, one has to ask themselves, what are we going to do?
Back to the timeline and the timing of this. So you plan to start the ring dike in next spring. If you start the ring dike and the DNR doesn't permit the dam, is that ring dike around Oxbow, Bakke, Hixson still needed?
I think anybody that was around in 2009, which, by the way, wasn't anything near a 100-year flood for this area, saw that the Oxbow area is a flood-prone area. So to have a ring dike around Oxbow, if the project never got built, if anything, nothing more than the ring dike ever got built, all of a sudden you'd have a community that had 500-year flood protection. I don't think that would be necessarily a bad thing.
But can't you agree that they've done quite a bit of flood protection since 2009?
They have not been able to build certifiable flood protection.
The forum recently ran an article about a plan B in the event federal funding doesn't happen. This kind of ties into what we were talking about, Daryl. What can you tell us about this alternate plan, and isn't it contrary to what your organization represented to the North Dakota legislature? The plan B, I think they're talking about.
I don't think there's anything contrary to what we presented to the North Dakota legislature, but let me just speak to Plan B as the forum did. I think any time that you're going through a process, and this actually started at the North Dakota State Legislature because they were concerned about what happens if you start a project on the north end and we're funding it and you don't get the full, you know, appropriation or any appropriation from the federal government, what are you going to do? That started a process of some blue sky thinking, none of which was the Diversion Authority Board making any decisions. It was the start of a process that said, you know what, if we come down from north all the way to the Maple River, there's immediate benefits there for those people up in that area. There, it isn't like Garrison, where until you get something done, you don't have a benefit. You can have a benefit. We have a benefit with the in-town levees, we have a benefit on the north, and we have a benefit with Oxbow, Bakke, Hixson. The whole issue of what people are calling Plan B was a what-ifing, of which, by the way, the Diversion Authority Board gave direction to have some analysis done on that, only for purposes of knowing whether that would be so devastating that that could never be done, or whether there is an opportunity to do that. So somehow, magically, that became Plan B, and yes, I know it was presented in an Oxbow City Council meeting, and obviously Morehead Council raised the issue. But it's something that when you start and you start thinking about things, somehow it grows legs and people think that that's what we're going to do. It is not what we're going to do until we have thoroughly investigated the notion of staging water with no secondary outlet as a diversion and what impact that has. Obviously, I'm not an engineer, but I would think it's going to have more impact. We're doing an analysis to find out how much.
We've been told that the Army Corps is, the Army Corps, the Omaha office is reviewing permits for operating in the North Outlet independent. Is this true? Independent of the South.
There are a number of permits that will have to be issued by the various resource agencies, and the Omaha District of the Corps of Engineers is actually the permitting agency for North Dakota. So yes, there will be some permit review done by the Omaha Corps of Engineers. For instance, if there is a 404 permit issued, that would be the responsibility of the Omaha District.
How far along are they, Daryl, in the Plan B study? You said it's being studied?
My understanding is that analysis should be back to us somewhere this fall or late this year.
Okay. Is Omaha examining the permitting of the South Dam as well?
There haven't been any permit applications submitted yet. I mean, that's a process that we're still a ways. The only thing that we're nearing construction on right now is the in-town levees and the Oxbow levee. The other work, there hasn't been any permit applications applied for.
Commissioner Vanio, this one's for you. In 2011, Dave Kolpak of the Associated Press quoted you in an article saying you had the deepest empathy and concern for the people impacted by the diversion and that you promised they would be made whole financially. So the question is, as Mayor Wallacker calls it, I think the grand final solution does not bring the property values back to pre-project levels. Will the Diversion Authority provide a guarantee of those values and agree to compensate the property owners within the ring dike for the difference in values?
Interesting question. The statement about making property owners whole, and I'm not going to be evasive here with what you're asking, but obviously that was intended to mean that people in buyout situations, would be certainly financially made whole. You've got a new kind of a different twist to it here in terms of the people within the ring levy. I can't say what's going to happen to property values, but I would suspect that similar to the situation that they have right now, I can't imagine that what we're hearing from these people is that they can't sell their homes, they can't get refinanced. So if that's true, I can't imagine if you're protected that wouldn't be just the opposite.
If the values do happen to go down, maybe this is a question for Tim Fox. If the values do go down, is that a compensatory taking? And maybe Tim could.
It is a good question, and I don't think the Corps would recognize it as a taking, and that would be the real issue because there wouldn't be any federal credit towards the project.
There was another question relating to, on the similar vein, where the Kindred School District was forced to raise two mills district-wide to get them back to the revenue that they needed to help run their school and pay for their new school. And there was a concern that Representative Belter from that district had introduced a bill during the legislative session requiring the Diversion Authority to reimburse approximately $70,000 to the Kindred School District. And the question is why did the Diversion Authority, I don't know if you personally, Commissioner Vanio, but certainly there was opposition from your group on that legislation, and if you could elaborate as to why.
Well, I think, first and foremost, that I believe that sets a very dangerous precedent for school districts to somehow take any project, be it a flood protection project or anything else across the state. And yes, I know that in the end the legislation here was worded to be specific to the Kindred School District, but I don't know that necessarily stops anyone in the future from asking for the same thing and saying, well, you did it here, you ought to be able to do it someplace else. I think the whole notion of something being devalued, be it something in the, that moves into a community or anything like that, and then to expect that entity to pay, you know, a school district is a dangerous precedent. I don't know of any other situation where that has ever happened. So that was first and foremost the situation. The number of dollars in comparison to what we're dealing with were not that significant for the diversion. But I think that opens the doors to a lot of other things along the entire diversion channel that could be stated in the same fashion. And devaluation of other properties that are not in Oxbow, Bakke, and Hixson for different reasons. Maybe it isn't even in the diversion. All of a sudden, every single little thing like that becomes an issue that taxes have to be made up. What about the fact that communities all over the state give tax abatements? If a county gives a tax abatement for an ethanol plant in Castleton, do we then have to pay the school district for that? Cities do that, and should they pay the school district for the losses in taxes? I mean, I think it's a similar situation.
Well, but Daryl, you alluded to this was a specific case. The worrying was specifically for this, and you know, you talked about it's a dangerous precedence to set. Is it a dangerous precedence to set to encroach in a different political body and stop their growth? I mean, would you admit that this limits the Kindred School District's growth and potential to increase its tax base?
I think that the Kindred School District, with what we're doing with the Ring Dike, keeps their tax base intact, and in fact, it even expands it within that because there'll be more homes potentially in the undeveloped lots.
Along that line, what's the plan to compensate landowners for the permanent loss of future development value?
I'm not sure I follow that. What's the plan compensate?
Obviously there's going to be easements created outside of the dike area, and those landowners will no longer be able to develop that land.
Oh. So, in other words, going beyond the ag mitigation that we're dealing with?
Correct.
That someone would say, you know what, I plan to develop that land. I don't know that has been taken into account in terms of what the ag mitigation folks are doing. Maybe, Roger, you could speak to that. You haven't gone beyond just ag land use, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And
I guess I would like to go back, too, to your question regarding the Kindred School District and the loss of tax revenue. The memorandum of understanding with the city of Oxbow does, in the interim, when we've got a very quantifiable way of measuring that, does address that. There is a provision in there that says the diversion authority will pay the city of Oxbow and the Kindred School District for loss of tax base. I'll start over. The diversion authority will pay the city of Oxbow and the Kindred School District for loss of tax base caused by property being taken out of service for the Oxbow, Hixson, Bakke levy project for a period of up to 4 years. And then he goes into some rather sophisticated way of calculating that the attorneys have worked out. But there is a provision in there that during the construction period, recognizing that there may be a time where there could be more homes torn down than there are constructed, we would offset that loss to both the city of Oxbow as well as the Kindred School District.
According to the Army Corps, there's a $30,000 per acre benefit for 14,000 rural Cass County acres that will be taken out of the floodplain by the project. How do they arrive at that value with current land values closer to $6,000 to $10,000?
I'm not sure that I can speak for the Corps. I'm trying, just so that I understand the question. The Corps of Engineers is saying there's a $30,000 per acre benefit. What was the $14,000?
About 14,000 Cass County acres that will be taken out of the floodplain by the project.
Oh, you know, I'm going to make a guess here, and maybe if somebody else has feels that I'm off base on this, but I would imagine that the the total benefits are then are taken for all of the people that are garnering benefit from this in terms of the dollars. In other words, if you have major floods and you've got multi-millions of dollars worth of impact on the negative side. Anybody else want to try? I mean, I can't speak to what the Corps was getting at there, but...
I can't address exactly what the Corps was getting at on that either, but when they do their benefit, they look at more than just the land. It's protect the benefit value is they have a series of criteria that they use, everything from the infrastructure to the economic, regional economic and national economic aspects of it, all play into the what they consider the benefit for the protection. And then if you're taking that and just dividing it by the land, I guess I'm not exactly sure how you're coming up with the value that you had for Darryl.
Well, it was the core number in the EIS. And I, from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, it's basically the cost savings that you don't have to do flood mitigation in order for it to, that land to be developed. Is that correct? That's one of the cost-saving benefits?
Again, they have a very elaborate process that they go in to establish the benefit. And I'm not... Without having it all here to look through, I can't address the specifics of that.
One other question here, but we've probably discussed it. What will the landowners get for surrendering the development future of their property? But I think you answered that, and that would be nothing.
Well, I don't know that we've gone beyond, first of all, I don't know that, at least in the most of the staging area that there is, that they're going to be able to develop that. They can farm it. They won't be able to develop it, obviously, because...
But that's our point. They can't be able to develop it now. They could have prior to being the staging area.
I guess maybe I can chime in on that, too, is whenever there's land, whether it's taken as... whether there's going to be an easement payment, whether the land is going to be purchased, whatever the case would be, there would be one or more appraisals done, and there are very specific rules that the federal government has on how those appraisals are done, and the bottom line is those appraisals are intended to make the landowner whole in the end.
And Tim Fox, being gone through this, maybe he wants to jump in.
Again, I'll go back to what the Army Corps looks at, and we'll go back up to Oxbow. If the easement is not going through somebody's property where they actually have to have somebody sign off on it, they aren't going to give any credit for any loss of value of home. And so it would be up to the local sponsor to make that up with local money if they felt the need to do that. So in other words, if the easement goes across your neighbor's property, you live in Oxbow, and it's a 17-foot high levee or 12-foot high levee that you're now looking at instead of the sunset, and the easement doesn't go through your property, the Army Corps is not going to give any credit for that because that person doesn't have to approve anything. They're just out of whatever happens. And on the appraisals, when the Army Corps is kind of interesting, it goes both ways. First of all, the Army Corps will require, if it's an Army Corps project, that the Uniform Relocation Act apply. I don't know what it's intended by the local sponsors, what they're going to apply or not apply to that, but there's rather stringent rules in the application of that. If, in fact, in the end result is they want to obtain credit, they'll have to follow those rules. But one of the things about those rules is, and the way it works under an authorized project, one of the goals of the Corps, not the construction division, but the real estate division, is to attempt to ensure that just compensation is provided to all parties that are being impacted. Again, excluding those who lost their view, they're not going to look at that because they don't need to have anything signed to disrupt that person's life. Backing up then, if it's an Army Corps authorized project, every appraisal that occurs and every acquisition that occurs needs the approval of the Army Corps of Engineers because they're going to ensure that there's just compensation. On all these preliminary acquisitions that are occurring, I have no idea who might be reviewing that to ensure that there's just compensation that would occur. And again, there, when the appraiser comes out, and I've looked at a number of appraisals, they are not going to consider what the future value of the property is. They're going to base their appraisal on the current best use of that property, which seems extremely ironic because if you're the adjacent property owner to Oxbow, and assume somebody who's an adjacent property owner has just recently entered into some type of a purchase agreement for a per acre value of land, if you're on the wrong side of that levy, they're going to look at your land as farmland, and they're going to treat the inside land as developable property. Now, who drew that line and who made a decision who's going to benefit and who's not going to be benefiting? Obviously, that isn't a decision that the person on the outside of that levy made, who now has actually probably a diminished value in his property, a substantial diminished value of his property, even from what it may have been, because that person can no longer build anything on it. When I've drafted the flowage easements for the Army Corps, which they have to approve, nothing's going to go on that land. There isn't going to be a single thing constructed on any parcel property in that staging area ever again. And so when we refer to that, you know, sort of as the dead zone, it is strictly done. And the reason for that is they don't want to get involved in future compensation for damages. The whole idea is to remove all that property so it's not damaged, and once they close out their books on a project, they're done, and they're not going to come back in and start making allocations or payment of benefits or something else to make up for losses that weren't originally determined or which were not originally thought of. And obviously in some cases there will be damages that weren't anticipated or weren't expected, and I don't know who those people might collect from, because I'm certain that the response will be it wasn't caused by this project, it was caused by Mother Nature. And we've repeatedly heard that you would have flooded anyway, even if you've never flooded before, because we've got maps that show you would have flooded. And and so that's the way it is. So I'm not sure what the process will be if, in fact, they get towards the part of condemnation, and whether or not who's going to review the original appraisals or who's going to review something for just compensation. One of the other factors involved in the getting the appraisals, there are stringent guidelines that are required to be followed in making those appraisals, but there is a creep that's involved. And when I say a creep that's involved, whoever sells first is going to get the least payment of anybody. I'll guarantee you that right now as the project proceeds and it gets down to the deadline, and they're attempting to figure out how they're going to get authorization for a project, because the sponsor is going to have somebody sign off that they have every easement and every acquisition in place, or there won't be anything done, at least on the Army Corps project. I don't know if they have 50% of them, they're going to ring dike 50% of the Hicks and Bakke area, or if they're going to wait until they attempt to have all of them. But the person who holds out the longest is going to get the most money. Nobody wants to get involved in eminent domain. Nobody wants to get involved in court processes. Nobody wants to go through long, drawn-out hearings on the testimony of what the value of property is. And I can assure you out there, the landowner always gets to select a second appraisal. And there'll be an appraiser out there that you'll all find. And he'll be substantially different than the first appraisal that's obtained. And that's just the way it works. Appraisers don't always agree, and you can find the most disagreeable one out there and raise havoc with the entire system.
Along those lines, Commissioner Vanio, is it true that the Diversion Authority has no obligation to compensate farmers that are damaged in the flooded in the staging area?
I don't know that we've ever stated that.
I don't know whether you stated it or not, but is there any obligation? Does the Diversion Authority have to?
We are currently working through our Ag Mitigation Policy Committee to establish easement and insurance issues to handle the farmer situation.
Do we know where we're at in regards to that as far as compensation?
I'll have Roger speak because he's the chair of that committee.
Maybe while Roger is coming up, Mr. Fox left open a question. I don't disagree with what Mr. Fox is saying, but he'd asked the question about whether the Uniform Act was going to be followed on all of the acquisitions, and I just wanted to clarify that it is our intent to follow the Uniform Act, and the Army Corps of Engineers will be reviewing our acquisitions and we'll be working very closely throughout the process with the Corps of Engineers Real Estate Division.
Okay, Nathan. I'm actually the chairman of our sub our agricultural subcommittee. And the subcommittee is made up of several farmers within the staging area and also others that aren't farmers but do have interests in land but maybe don't necessarily farm it today. The process has been a slow process, it's been a deliberate process, and it will continue to be a very deliberate process to find a solution to the impacts that we are going to bring to the ag land. We're in the process of looking at an insurance, a possibility of having an insurance rider on your multi-peril insurance that the Diversion Authority would pay for, so that if we back water up on a standing crop, or if the project operates and it delays and puts your crop or your land into a prevent plant situation, then we are looking at ways that we can cover that loss. I'm convinced that we can find a way to cover that loss. We have talked to people within the industry. We've gotten really good suggestions, and we will continue to go forward to get a resolution. And I'm sure that the farmers on my committee that are part of this group right here tonight will make sure that we come to a resolution of protection for the ag land. And I'm convinced of that.
A couple points, Roger. And with all due respect, I think if we were to get those members of that committee up here, I think they'd strongly disagree with you. I don't think their voice has been heard to date, and I don't think it will be in the future. And along those lines, I'm no actuary, and I don't think you are either. What insurance company in this world would insure something so small and so narrow with such a high risk? You really can't tell us that an insurance company would cover that, can you?
I can't guarantee there's an insurance company that would. But we have been told by people within the industry that it is possible and very likely that we could have a rider developed that would be put on the multi-peril. And it was suggested by them. It wasn't suggested by anybody on the Diversion Authority. It was something that he brought forward, and he said that it has been done many times for smaller groups, and it's presented. Sure, it has to be accepted, and it's no guarantee. Well, we don't know that. Well, I think that's up to the Diversion Authority. Is that right?
Yes. And I guess that leads to the original question: is the Diversion Authority obligated to do anything for those farmers?
I can answer that. No, we aren't. Under the core process, I'm being honest. Under the core process, the core uses flow easements to address this. And it has been the Diversion Authority that has directed our committee to do something more than flow easements. And that really came from the farmers that are there on our committee that want more than just a flow easement, something that they can count on down the road. Thank you.
That brings us to another question that I know we discussed earlier, and it talks about, it's a farm question, probably for you, Roger, about reduced yields in the APH or actual production history. Ken, I bet you knew that acronym back there, didn't you? There you go. But certainly, you know, as this land is used for staging water and the yields would very possibly be significantly damaged, any farmer knows that production history is going to be damaged. Not to mention the denitrification, possible saline situations that can be caused from holding water. And as you know, in North Dakota, land is not taxed on market value. It's taxed on a productivity index, so how productive it is. So we could see diminished values not only from a production side, but from an actual quality of the land standpoint. So has that been discussed, and is there some compensation involved for that too?
That has been discussed, and it was brought up by the farmers that are on our committee. And we have not come to a resolution on that. That will definitely be something that we are looking at as we go forward. We are ways off on this, you know, on this compensation package or insurance package. There's a lot of issues that are thrown on the table.
I don't disagree with you that you're a ways off, but at the same time, we're being told that this project could start next spring. You've been working on this for 2 years. Are you going to make that much headway in 8 months that they're going to agree with you and then you can start construction?
Nathan, if it was up to me, we would be meeting many times more often, and we would be coming to a resolution. But I've been asked to slow down.
Well, sure, so they can start the project, and then it's too late.
I know. I've been asked to slow down by members of the Ag Committee. Indirectly, they asked me to slow down, that we're going too fast. So, Nathan, if it was up to me, I'd have it done, and the farmers would know.
If it was up to Congress, we'd have a farm bill, too, but they haven't completed that. They can't get along, and they can't get along with this either.
Any other questions?
I think there's a little bit of a misperception, too, about how often the water would actually be staged. The project is designed so that in a 10-year flood is the first time that there would ever be where the gates would actually even be operated. And then the maps that we show regularly with the number of acres that are inundated, those are for a 100-year event, which is a much worse event than we've ever had. If you look at the floods between a 10-year and a 100-year flood, during many of those lower-level floods, there would be no water staged. So this isn't something that's going to be happening every year. In fact, during the lesser floods, I think people have to recognize, too, that there's going to be a huge drainage benefit to the region because we've got this very, very large, deep drainage ditch. So during those minor floods, farmers will actually see benefits from the improved drainage. And it's only during the most extreme events that the water is going to be staged. And I think just talking, I mean, I talked to farmers around the region too, and there's a lot of farmers along the river whose land goes underwater every year, and they still get very good crops on it.
Well, in regards to that, with the farmers and the farmsteads, is it the intention to relocate entire farmsteads and protect entire farmsteads, or is it just the houses? There's been some confusion with some of the one-on-one meetings that the Corps is looking at protecting the homes but not the farmsteads. Can you clarify that?
I don't know that I've ever heard the Corps starting to divide up those situations. I don't know that we have taken a look at every single farmstead and made that determination. There has been some mapping done with the levels of water, and there has been some indications that X number of farmsteads and residences will have to be bought out. There are some that are in fine shape or it would require some minor levy work, and then there's the gray area that there's been no determination made.
In regards to the buyouts of some farmsteads, has there been other land located where they can relocate their farmsteads? Because that's part of the process, correct?
I didn't hear
that. That's part of the process.
Well, you know, we've been aware of the fact that we should, if we could, find land to take a look at purchasing land for that purpose. In other words, trade-offs. This was done in prior projects, the Maple River. I believe dam was an example. We have not done that at this point. And I don't mean that we haven't looked. We've had some indications of that there may be some land for sale, and Keith has looked at some of that, but there has been no purchase.
Could some of those farmsteads be relocated into the ring dike?
I don't know that we've given any thought to that, no.
We had a concerned citizen, Northern Richland County, apparently had a meeting with some Corps representatives recently, and they showed him on the map where all of his outbuildings would be flooded, but not his house. And it was indicated to him that by virtue of that his house wasn't going to flood, he was not impacted. And I'm curious if you're familiar with this. And
I'm not familiar with that particular situation. You know, we've said earlier, and I guess we'll stick to that, the Corps of Engineers looks at things on a case-by-case basis, and in some of those instances, they'll do a takings analysis. The Diversion Authority has made a commitment in those areas that we're going to go beyond the minimum required by the Corps. So if the Corps may have been the individual, I'm not familiar with that particular circumstance, but if there was an individual from the Corps that quoted the Corps' rules, he may well have been correct in interpreting the Corps' minimum rules, but the Diversion Authority has made a commitment to go beyond what the Corps requires as a minimum.
Also, another question was asked. One farmer that Northern Richland County, his farm is 2 feet below the pool height, as indicated, but he's outside the red line and therefore is told that he's not impacted. And he asked Tom Waters, I believe it was, who you all remember was here for some time, and he could not provide him with an answer to the question as to how in this flat land, if you're 2 feet lower than the pool height, how you're not impacted. Because I don't think Highway 46 would stop it. So then the question becomes, if someone is impacted, let's take someone who has never experienced flooding on a parcel of ground, and all of a sudden after this project is up and running, is now impacted, but he's outside the red line, and he's told, and it was indicated to me by one person that I asked that, well, how do we know that he wouldn't have flooded anyway? And obviously that's not a very comforting answer, but I guess the question is, how does someone prove that they were damaged when you have somebody looking at a map saying, nope, our map says that this isn't our fault and you'd have got flooded anyway? Make sense, Keith?
I guess I'd just comment on the red line. First of all, I think maybe that information wasn't correct because there was a red line drawn by the Corps of Engineers early on the map, but that red line was, they used a 1 foot impact area. They said if there's one or more feet, they drew a red line and said, this is that demarcation line. Again, the Diversion Board of Authority has said, we think 1 foot is too much. We're going to go beyond that 1 foot line and look at those impacts. So if somebody really had 2 feet of impact, they would have been inside the red line.
If either of you been directly involved enough where you might speak to what if your mapping is incorrect?
I get one possibility in that case, and I don't have any idea where this location is. It could be a case where there's structures that are 2 feet underwater, but if the change in water surface elevation was nothing, then there is no impact if they're already under 2 feet of water. And I'm speculating on that. I don't know the location, but that's generally, it is possible to have someone who would be inundated who would have already been inundated by the same amount.
The question begs, you know, some farmers and rural residents can fight off water if it's 6 inches deep. But what we're being shown outside the staging area is if it increases at 8, 9, 10 inches, they can no longer fight that battle. And the Corps doesn't require any compensation for those folks. Is that correct, Keith? Is that what you stated?
It's a little more complicated than that they said beyond that red box, they would have to look at individual properties and do what they call a tankings analysis to determine whether there was compensation warranted or not.
On those same lines, if the new FEMA maps come out with the change in elevation, what will be the insurance requirements of those folks outside that red line? Do you know?
There again, when the new FEMA map comes out, it's going to be a property-by-property basis. The new FEMA maps are not related to this project. I mean, the draft maps that have been issued some years ago that we expect will be adopted, those are not related to the project. So I guess I'm not sure I understand the question.
But you're encouraging FEMA or encouraging the Corps to pursue FEMA to change the maps because FEMA and Corps are not going off the same elevations, correct? I mean, off the same flood level for a 100-year flood.
I guess there has...
I won't be able. You said we're encouraging FEMA to.
Well, you're basing your numbers off of new numbers. You're not basing off of FEMA numbers. Right. You're basing off of Corps numbers, somewhat
traditionally,
manipulated.
Traditionally, FEMA follows the Corps at some point. We're not encouraging FEMA to do anything, obviously that would be detrimental to the people that would have to pay the insurance sooner than later.
But your numbers are, you know, indicating that, but we can labor on that for a long time.
I guess just to clarify that, we're trying to hire get the best possible technical information we can get. We've got the most current analysis that have been done. The numbers that FEMA uses are many years old, so yes, we do expect that our numbers are better, but there has been no encouragement. It's up to FEMA which numbers they decide to use. We're just trying to use the best science available.
Well, you manipulated it by taking certain years, though. You ignored years from, what, 1940 and prior, and just used more current numbers. I mean, the FEMA has the current numbers, but they are taking a whole 100-year span, and you went 40 years. You eliminated the dry years. Is that not correct?
No, the way you've stated it is misleading. The Corps of Engineers hired a national panel of experts to look at both if they considered the entire period of record as well as if they considered the wet period of record. And so both of those pieces of information are available. Ultimately, the Corps of Engineers said for instance, for the 100-year flood, if you consider just the wet period, it's somewhat higher than if you consider the entire period of record. But for some floods, for instance, the 500-year flood, if you look at the entire period of record, it's actually worse than if you look at the most recent 40 years. So, yes, there were some experts, but it wasn't, as you mentioned, manipulated. Again, it was just trying to get the best minds in the country to come up with the best science available.
I have a two-part question on a little different vein. Does the City of Fargo or the Diversion Authority have an alternative plan at the ready based on the failure of the current plan that they haven't told the public about? And then the second part of the question is, with the current climate in Congress, Nathan alluded to it, how do you expect our delegation to get funding? So, do you got both parts?
Okay. I do. Thanks, Commissioner. The only plan that we have is the plan I stated before, continued work on in-town levees, ring diking, Oxbow, Bakke, Hickson, and starting on the north end. We cannot start on the north end with state funds in terms of construction, but we're completing design. It's near completion, and if there was authorization, the only thing that we would really be able to do would start the process, because it takes a long period of time, would be land acquisition. But the state was clear in the fact that no state monies would be used for construction. That is our plan. And if we are fortunate enough to get authorization this fall or late this year, and leading into your second part with our delegation, we have to give them the opportunity. I know it's a tough situation, but we have to see whether or not we had some indication that Representative Boehner had indicated that as soon as they got back in September, they may be taking a vote on the authorization. If so, who knows what it may look like in comparison to the Senate's version, and you may have kind of that back and forth issue. But there has to be, and I hope that there's discussion at that level, that you have to start the process of appropriating monies for these projects rather than just filling the bucket with more authorized projects.
Moving on to the next category, and it relates to township issues. What is the Diversion Authority's plan to compensate Pleasant Township for the repairing of roads caused by operation of the staging area and also damage caused by construction of the ring dike? And then there's a few others in here, but I'll let you do those two, and then I can give you the rest of them. So compensation for roads damaged by the staging area and construction.
I don't know that we've addressed that. It does not mean that that there wouldn't be some understanding. I do believe, again, there's a history, and this goes back, and correct me if I'm wrong, Roger, but with the Maple River Dam, that there was dollars that went towards townships for roads, basically because the tax base was taken away, so they continued to fund, right, the townships. So I think that there is an understanding that if we're going to have road damage and things like that, that that we would have to take a look at it, but it hasn't been addressed at this point.
Okay, also there's concerns inside the ring dike about additional snow removal with the dike possibly acting like a giant snow fence. And then just, are there any guarantees that any of these costs incurred by the township would be reimbursed so the township is not left holding the bag? I mean, are they going to have to arm wrestle for every reimbursement, or is that going to be dealt with up front?
Again, I can't say we specifically talked about snow removal. I've addressed the township issue with roads, but we'd have to take a look at that.
I know there has been a few discussions about Bakke. We had heard from a number of the residents that were concerned about the snow with a north-facing levee. And our response to that was, right now there is a fairly thick shelter belt along there that does cause the snow to drift in the backyards of those homes. The levee is actually, the footprint of the levee is going to actually be at least 150 feet farther north than that shelter belt. So we think they'll actually have, or we can look at the levee and surmise that they will actually have less snow drifting within the Bakke subdivision once the levee is there than they do now with the shelter belts, just because of its location in relation to the north wind.
Question here, when do you plan to announce the cost to the Cass County residents, total cost for the ring dike? I know there's been projections.
Well, it's always been $65 million. Just I think last week or so there was some indication that because we were going to fund further infrastructure costs for some of the lots in Oxbow, I don't know, Keith, if you're familiar with that, but I know Pat Zavril had mentioned that there would be those additional costs. But it's been $65 million, and that's what we're sticking by, with the exception of this additional infrastructure.
Yeah, that's correct. The original estimate was based on 42 replacement lots. Subsequent to that original estimate, it was decided that the infrastructure would be provided for approximately another 40 lots. So while the cost of the land has been accounted for, the cost of that infrastructure for those last 40 lots has not yet been estimated in detail.
Nearly all the township's roads will be underwater during the operation of the staging area. What township roads does the Diversion Authority intend to raise to give the residents ingress and egress?
I think that level of detail hasn't been done yet. One of the things that when we look at whether to ring dike a farmstead or a resident is just that, looking at both whether to, how to protect them and to provide egress, but that's one of those detailed questions that'll be done further down the road.
Okay, there's several cemeteries that appear to be underwater under the current design. Two questions, I guess. How do you plan to deal with that? And do you know what North Dakota and Minnesota law require?
Anyone?
I guess I'm not going to. Speak to what the law requires because I honestly don't know. I'll just say, we are going to be very sensitive to those areas and recognize that it is a very sensitive and issue that we need to be respectful of. I will also say that we're working for the county for 20 years and driving around the county during the floods we've had now without the diversion, I've seen a lot of cemeteries underwater.
I'm going to hold your feet to the fire now, Keith, and ask you where they are.
I guess the one that comes to mind up Highway 26 up at the Nora Church, there's actually several cemeteries up there that most springs do see some water, and in fact, one of the floods, they even had some gravestones that were damaged, but for the most part, those cemeteries have seen water many times, and I'm not trying to be insensitive, I'm just saying that it happens now.
So what's your plan then, to let them flood?
I think each of those cemeteries will have to be looked at on an individual case-by-case basis and that determination made.
And I respect that, but with all due respect, there's a lot of details, not knowing what roads you're going to raise, not knowing if you have to remove cemeteries. How can you stick with $65 million and have those questions unknown yet?
I think as the project goes on, there's always going to be new information that's going to be forthcoming. It's what the process we've been through on this project from day one is we've tried to be very transparent, and as we've had information, we've tried to share it. The problem with that is sometimes we're sharing information, and oftentimes we're sharing information with the public before we have all the answers, and we're trying to do that to be open and transparent. But at the same time, then we're asked questions like, well, why are you talking to us if you haven't studied that yet? So it's a chicken or egg, but we've chosen to keep the public involved throughout the process, realizing that some of the answers we don't have now, and we'll get those answers as time goes on.
Can you give us some examples of what the alternatives would be for those cemeteries? I don't expect you to have an answer, but what would some alternatives be?
I don't know. You know, that's an area that, like a lot of areas, we have to employ specialists. There are experts in these areas, and when we address those, we will employ those experts to advise us on the proper course of action.
Tom, have you had any communications with anyone in this regard? Yeah, this is Tom O'Hara. He's with CH2M Hill Project Management.
We have been working with the Corps of Engineers to try to address what those solutions are, and we've got, and I apologize, I don't have the talking points here in front of me on that, but there is a talking point on our webpage that goes through what the current plan is for the cemeteries, and without me reading through this, we tried to download it here. There are some specific state laws that will be followed. We will follow all of the North Dakota side, the North Dakota state laws in dealing with the cemeteries, as well as the Minnesota for the ones that are on the Minnesota sides. And we will work through the requirements that are there to protect those in accordance with Minnesota law, North Dakota law, and the core requirements. I don't know if that helps answer it. So, bottom line is we're working through the process here and trying to ensure that they're properly protected and mitigated for.
Tom, I have a business question for you, and that is, can you give us approximately how much your firm is being paid to work on this project?
We just received a task order for $180,000 a month for supporting the project.
And then, Daryl, and you and I discussed this at another meeting, I think, at the Civic, but if you could tell us what the total expenses are, you know, monthly or annually or however you want to break it down for the Diversion Authority. We've had some questions relating to that.
I'll throw out some numbers, and Mike, if you have some clearer, have others to add, by all means do so. We started out with, and I'm going to speak toward the Diversion Authority budgets. A couple of years ago, we had a 1.5 on top of a $15 million budget, so we had $16.5 million last year, and there was some carryover into the next year, which was fiscal year 2013, which was a $29 million budget. And I'm going to ask Mike if he knows what we're going to be projecting to carry over. But anyway, let's just say if we spent it all, that would be 30 plus the 16. That would be 46 that the Diversion Authority has spent. Now, we've got, and what we paid CH2M Hill is part of that process, as well as engineering firms and all of that. And so far, I think.
Did everybody hear that? $11 million carryover, Mike?
$11 million yep. Is projected to be carried over into, we just addressed this at the Diversion Authority, a $70 million budget for fiscal year 2014.
How much has that has been the federal share to date, total?
Well, the federal share, it comes into, first of all, the Corps of Engineers has put in a lot of effort previously, and yes, the last fiscal year they had $5 million. At one time we thought there was going to be zero, and then we ended up getting seven. I believe during the state legislature, I had asked Aaron roughly what do you think the Corps has spent on the project, and I think I remember him saying somewhere between $30 and $40 million.
$34 million was their estimate of what they've invested so far, and as Daryl said, seven point four for the last year.
And no dollars allocated for this future year, correct? There's no dollars allocated for this future year?
There's no dollars in the FY14 president's budget for this project. I do have a clarification on the cemetery issue.
Sure, go ahead, please.
I was able to go back and look at it. As of right now, there are no cemeteries that are in the alignment of the diversion channel itself. But there are 12 that have potential impacts that have been identified. Each one of those will be evaluated on a case-by-case basis. Mitigation that could be evaluated for that is either the construction of a ring levee to protect cemetery and or relocation using the proper procedures related to that. So each one of those 12 cemeteries will be evaluated on a case-by-case basis.
Okay, Tom, you mentioned the Corps, and I have a question, and I'm not here to bash the Corps or anything, but I'll let their finances speak for themselves. We saw in surrounding communities that if they say it's going to cost $10 million, it's probably going to cost $20 million. So if I'm assuming the $65 million on the Hickson-Bakke-Oxbow ring dike is a Corps number, correct?
That number was developed jointly with the Corps and the local team.
Okay. So if that goes significantly over budget, and here's an if, like Breckenridge did, Roseau did, then what happens?
Well, in that particular component of this project, the local team is controlling the majority of the project. The Corps has been designated as the lead technical for the design, but the local team is going to be doing the land acquisition, is going to be doing the majority of the design work, so the cost controls will be done more with the local team in that particular project.
Leading into that then, if there are cost overruns, or even if there aren't, are the people of Oxbow and Bakke and Hickson, or in particular Bakke and Hickson, expected to, are they going to be specially assessed any of those differences?
No, that's not their responsibility.
So whose responsibility will it be?
It'd be the Diversion Authority.
Ongoing repair and maintenance of that, let's say it's all done and up, is Hickson, Bakke, and Oxbow going to be special assessed for any kind of repairs and maintenance going forward?
To their own levy?
For the Hickson, the ring dike around their communities.
Yeah. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, Keith, that there will be no assessment to those communities for the diversion. There will be no assessment for the construction of the ring levee. I think that the MOU alluded to the fact that there could be for maintenance and operation.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah, it's operations and maintenance only.
How would, if there were streets and gutters added, would that be assessed to the homeowners?
Say that again.
If there are streets and gutters that are required?
Oh, okay, I'm going back to Oxbow. If you have streets and gutters for the people that move to a lot from one of the 40 that are being displaced, I don't think that they're expected to.
No, relocation, the utility, the public infrastructure for any of the relocation sites will be paid for.
But my question was more in particular for Bakke. If it's deemed that paved streets and gutters are needed to alleviate the water, will they be assessed that in the Bakke edition? Because it's obviously gravel now.
Well, part of the plan that will be developed by the design team will be the interior drainage requirements, and any of that cost is part of the project cost. So anything that's required to maintain adequate interior drainage will be covered as part of the construction project.
When will that be completed?
The design?
Yes.
The design was just approved for beginning here at this last Diversion Authority Board. It's anticipated that the design, the first phase of the design will be done by July of 2014.
Nathan, there's a project design team of which there are members from Oxbow, Bakke Hixon area. There are members of that, and the questions you're asking are really the things that that project design team, in conjunction with the engineers, will be addressing.
We understand there's a memorandum of understanding between Fargo or the Diversion Authority and Oxbow, and we understand that there were significant hours of negotiations that occurred between the Fargo lawyers and the DA and the DA lawyers and Oxbow's lawyers. And where the question comes from, what did Cass County do to safeguard or represent the residents of Bakke and Hixon during those negotiations? Because I don't think you have a memorandum of understanding with Bakke and Hixon, correct?
Well, and there's probably a reason. The fact is that there has never been anyone from Bakke and Hixon that has stepped forward, as Oxbow did, to try and put something together that would be advantageous to the community and the Diversion Authority in terms of what they're working out.
I'd politely disagree with that. I think a lot of people in Bakke would take offense to that because they had a vote and it was completely ignored. It was to not have this ring dike. So why were they asked to take a vote? But why were they asked to take a vote and then it was completely ignored? I guess that's a burr for a lot of people.
And when they knew that what was going to be done, there was still no one that stepped forward to address anything. We are hoping that with the project design team that, those issues will come out in terms of drainage and those types of issues. Now, going back to the MOU, I don't know that there was a lot of, as you put it, Commissioner, a lot of attorney hours spent sitting down with Oxbow's attorney and so forth. Most of the work I do, yes, there was attorneys reviewing it and the language and so forth, but I think at least for the most part, I believe it was all independent. There was a lot things that were drafted by Oxbow. They were presented to us. We did some tweaking to them. We passed those several months ago, sent it back to them. A period of time went by. They made some minor adjustments to that, probably based upon their attorney's advice and others. It came back to us, and we approved it. That was a back and forth that took place with that MOU.
Back to an earlier comment Mr. Burnt made. Majority of it, the reason was, the impetus was, your legal counsel said you couldn't supersede a city or a town, but you could a township. Is that correct? The reason why Bakke doesn't have a voice and Oxbow did?
I think more correctly stated, the reason that township and Bakke hasn't had a voice, we've been pretty consistent, just as we have been with Oxbow, in inviting those folks to the table to talk. But I think the message we've heard back is we're opposed to the project, so why would we want to talk to you about how you're going to build the project? And that's in a nutshell, as I said earlier, that door is wide open. We were encouraged just a week ago that a number of folks from the subdivision were nominated to serve on the design team, because we've asked for that. We've asked for that input consistently, and that door remains open if folks want to come in and talk. But if the only discussion is we're opposed to the project, so we're not going to talk about its design, that's not very helpful for us.
So it kind of goes back to when you asked, I'm really dumbfounded by this. Why would you ask Mr. Bewer for a vote on the ring dike if you really had no intention of listening to it? You follow me? Twice he was asked, and I don't mean to get in an argument with you, but was he or was not asked to take a community vote?
I don't recall asking specifically for a community vote. However, if you'd let me finish, please. Certainly, if the community chose to take a vote, I think that was one of the factors that the Diversion Board of Authority, took into account when they made their decision. I don't think anybody ever represented to to the Bakke subdivision that they ultimately were going to be able to decide on the ring levy.
Let me follow up on that. Aaron Schneider is quoted in the Diversion Authority minutes stating that they would not look at a ring dike if it was not wanted. That's a direct quote from Aaron Schneider.
I think when the Corps says if it's not wanted, the Corps looks to the local sponsors for their direction. So Aaron may well have said that, but I don't think he was referring, and I don't know, I wasn't there, but whether he was referring to the subdivision that didn't want it or whether he was referring to whether the local sponsors were supportive of it or not.
Just a few cleanup questions now. If the DNR does not approve the dam, how high will the water get in Bakke? I mean, potentially, how high would the water get? I mean, if there's no dam.
I'm sorry. If
there's no dam, how high would the water be in Bakke?
You're saying if there's no diversion / dam.
That's correct.
What would a 500 event do to Bakke?
Correct.
I think I don't have those flood maps in front of me, but if one would look at the existing 100-year or 500-year floodplain maps, those maps are readily available as to what a flood would look like without a project.
I guess the question begs, does Bakke need a dike if the dam is not approved by DNR? Are we moving too fast with a dike before DNR approves it? Why not wait until the DNR approves the dam and then look at a dike? Why the dike first? Seems like the buggy before the horse.
You know, the whole issue here is that There's protection, number one. Number two, there's the issue of moving ahead with something that people have been telling us that they're in a limbo state. It's our quickest way to get somebody out of a limbo state. And so to move forward...
But it's not a limbo state that was created because of a flood. It's a limbo state that you created.
Okay, if... Thank you.
I guess the only thing I would say is, you know, if Bakke does not have a flood risk, why then was the county approached by Bakke in 2009 and asked to build a levee around it?
Well, I think a 2-foot levee and a 12-foot levee are two different things.
But my point is, if there was concern in the community during a 50-year flood that they were at risk, why wouldn't they be at risk for a 100 or a 500-year flood?
Keith, that's not the argument I'm having. The point is they don't need a 12-foot dike around their homes without the dam.
Nathan,
that's the point I'm making.
Nathan, this goes back that there is one solution to protect the community of Fargo-Moorhead and other communities that are inside that ring levee. That is one solution, and we're trying to mitigate it through this process. So mitigation is the issue here in terms of how we're protecting people rather than displacing all the people and the buyouts, rather than a Kindred school district having that depletion of resources. There's countless reasons why we are doing this. But first and foremost, if people would understand that it is to protect them just as much as it is to protect anyone in the Fargo-Moorhead community.
Well, we could go into a long debate about that in regards to protecting some and not protecting others, and is it the one grand solution? You know, we feel that there are other solutions that haven't been looked at, but we won't get into that tonight, and we'll agree to disagree that there are other solutions that don't protect for Fargo's future growth, and that's what this comes down to. You can protect Fargo City as it sits, but it's the future growth that you're trying to protect for.
I think I would just disagree with that. You know, we've had... If there were a simpler or a less expensive solution to protect the metropolitan area, why in the world wouldn't we build it? I mean, we've had a number of experts, and between the Corps of Engineers, the private consultants, and the best experts we can find tell us again and again, you cannot protect the metropolitan area with levees alone. You need to have a diversion. You cannot get we cannot get above a 50-year level of protection for the Fargo area with levees alone. If levees alone were the solution, we'd be building them, and we are building them as high as we can build them. But the reality is when all of that levee work that's being done now in Fargo is completed, it still won't provide the level of protection that the metropolitan area needs for a major flood. The only solution for that is to build a diversion.
Well, now, let's go back and rewind a couple of years. There was the Minnesota diversion that had no staging area and only took 31 square miles out. This one takes 71, nearly double. So there are other solutions.
I think the question, if the audience didn't hear it, was about the Minnesota, why not build the diversion in Minnesota? I think from a county's perspective, we saw that the Minnesota diversion provided a similar level of protection for downtown Fargo and downtown Moorhead than the North Dakota diversion does, but it did nothing for those areas in the counties to the north and the south of Fargo that we fight floods in every year. So as a county, we were very much pushing for let's not build a Minnesota diversion and then have Cass County have to come up and build a diversion up around Harwood, build a second diversion to protect those flood-prone areas. Why not build one diversion that protects both the cities of Fargo and Moorhead as well as those rural areas in Cass County that around the metropolitan area?
Speaking of Moorhead, are you still including Moorhead in the cost-benefit ratio? Did we ask this earlier?
You haven't asked it, no.
Okay. Is Moorhead still included in the cost-benefit ratio?
To my knowledge, yes.
Even though they're pretty well protected and
I think there's a misnomer about the level of protection there, because Keith and I and a few others sat in on a city council meeting that Bob Zimmerman conveyed very clearly that they are not protected to what many people, including some of the council members, believe they are protected to, not in terms of certified levies. They are not protected.
But it is true you're using pre-numbers, pre-protection numbers, not post. You're looking at what Fargo or Moorhead did prior to any levy work rather than after, correct?
The levy work, as you probably may or may not be aware, the current design of the diversion would allow water to still go through, quite substantial amount of water to still go through the Fargo-Moorhead area. So those levees that are being constructed in both the Fargo and the Moorhead side are necessary even with the diversion in place. So they are an integral part of the diversion. So yes, they were included in the cost, in the cost-benefit calculations.
Given what's the cost-benefit ratio right now of this project?
You know, there's a couple of different methodologies they can use depending on the discount factor that's used, but the most common one used and used at the congressional level is about 1.8.
Recently, a couple of weeks ago in Valley City, the Corps of Engineers is quoted by saying that if it's not a 2.0 or above, there's hardly any chance of getting federal funds.
What we've been told in Washington by the when we've had those visits is that it would be better if it was above a 2.0, but they said they consider a lot of factors, and one of the reasons that the headquarters level, that the Corps considers this project so important, is they've said there's no other project they have in the country that protects 250,000 people, and there's no other project that they have in the country that would result in 600 deaths if there was a 500-year flood and the levees failed. So in other words, they consider the cost-benefit, but the loss of life potential weighs very heavily.
Okay, that raises another question. What's the loss of life if this dam were to break?
If the dam were to fail, that would be catastrophic. And for that reason, as you're aware, both the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, the North Dakota State Water Commission, and the Corps of Engineers have very, very stringent standards so that when they build a dam, it doesn't break.
let's keep it orderly here. I know we're dealing with some emotional things and certainly some disagreement in the room, but are you still using 46.7 feet for a 500-year flood?
That's the Corps of Engineers level, yes.
Okay. And is the DNR using that number also for their permitting process?
There are two different ways that, and the DNR includes both of those when they look at when you calculate what the height of the water is going to be. You can calculate, you can say, okay, what if we have a flood, we do not build any levees, we just let the entire metropolitan area flood? You'll get one height of water, naturally, because the water spreads out. You can model it that way and you get one number. Then you can model it. You can say, okay, what if we build emergency levees through town like we've done and like are there now and like we do during every flood? What will the water height be in those circumstances? And you get two different numbers. So there's been a lot of rhetoric, I'll call it, made about people are distorting the numbers. No, there's a 500-year flood number. If you allow every basement in Fargo to fill up with water, there's a 500-year number. If you try to build emergency levees to fight that and then fail, it's going to get higher. It's going to not get as high if you do nothing. And so those are the difference in the numbers that Minnesota DNR and we've talked about. And oftentimes FEMA uses the no protective measures number. A lot of times FEMA will look at it and say, we're going to assume you do nothing and the water spreads out. So there isn't any, you know, there's no game playing. You know, people take bits and pieces of information like that and try to call foul, but if they would read the entire reports, they would understand. It's scientists trying to put out accurate information.
One last question, and this is probably an easy money question. Current cost to sandbag and protect with temporary levees in Fargo, is it not about $4 million, did I hear? I think Senator Hovind used that number one time. Does that sound right, Mr. Burnt?
I'm sorry, to protect to what level?
Well, if let's say, you know, what did you spend in 09 to protect the city with temporary measures?
I don't recall the number. It was a much bigger number than $4 million, though.
Okay. I thought I heard Senator Hovind say one time, and maybe I misheard or maybe he had a wrong number.
I could say the county constructed a far lesser number of levees than the city of Fargo did, and we spent well in excess of $4 million.
And that was all for Fargo or for other communities too?
No, that was for the rural subdivisions in Kings
right,
County.
Right, right. So, okay, I think maybe the numbers, the senator. Go ahead, Commissioner.
This comes from a slide, and I hope that it may shed some light on it because I don't know what all went into it, but this was 2009, the flood of record stage was 40.8. Emergency measures cost approximately $70 million.
And that was in 1 year?
2009.
All right.
That was $70 million.
All right. And annual maintenance costs on the diversion, I believe, every year would be in the neighborhood of $5 million?
I think it was initially at $3 million is what I had heard, but $3 to $5 million.
I think we're at the end of the road here. We're about 10 minutes over what we promised we would do in an hour and a half. We did get one more quick question. If Fargo does not get a diversion, how much more development will occur in West Fargo and Moorhead? That's probably it.
You know, it's kind of a speculative question, but I think, again, there's a misnomer out there that Moorhead is probably protected. While it's true, Moorhead is much higher. Their natural ground is 4 to 5 feet higher than Fargo's, so they are higher, but there's maybe a misnomer about their level of protection. And then also West Fargo, I mean, while it's true, the area south of Interstate 94 is protected from the Cheyenne River flooding. During an extreme event, they still have a vulnerability from the Red River flooding.
I think what the question was alluding to is there would be no further development in Fargo probably without this diversion. Is that safe to say?
I think there's not a diversion today, and if you drive through South Fargo, there's a lot of construction going on, so I don't think that's a correct statement at all.
For how much longer, though? But anyway.
All right, we want to thank Commissioner Vanio and Mr. Burnt and the other folks that came out with them to help answer our questions. We hope we did a good job in answering everybody's questions. And someone was ribbing me when they came in. I just want to clarify that I don't think these are bar stools, and I know that Nathan and I are not engineers. So I just wanted to clarify that for any of the media that might be here. So I just want to thank you all for coming. Thanks for being respectful, and I suspect that the commissioner and these folks will stick around for a while. If you have any direct questions, I'm sure they would be more than happy to visit with you personally. Thank you all very much for coming. Oh, Commissioner?
I want to thank you, Commissioner Miller and Nathan, for doing a good job moderating this. Thanks.